It is Sunday, July 18th, 2021, which means you haven't stepped into a time warp and are accidentally watching last week's Talk Heathen, which J. Mike and I did together. You are watching this week's Atheist Experience, where J. Mike and I are doing together. So how you doing, man?
Well, I figured since, you know, you came on my little show, I'd come on your little show. And so so here I am.
It makes sense. One of these days, you'll figure out how to unmute at the start of the show, and then you'll have all the shows.
Yeah, yeah. Once we get the rudimentary stuff down, we'll work that way.
Tech issues are part and parcel of making sure that people know that we're actually doing this shit live and that we didn't. I can't tell you that over the years, like 16 years of doing this, occasionally somebody will email it and be like, "Oh, I don't believe that the people who call into your show are actually real. I think this is all scripted. It's an act and all that." And I'm like, "Really? Okay. Well, you can call. You do realize you can pick up the phone and call."
Yeah, all those mistakes I make, hopefully that's indicative of the case that we are extremely human, because you will probably see that a lot more from myself if I'm not as careful as I should be.
Well, welcome to Atheist Experience. It'll be, it could be an incredibly bumpy ride. We got a load of theists on hold, and I'm going to start you off with somebody long ago. Who hasn't called in a little while, and that's Min in California. Welcome, you're live. How can we help?
Oh, hello, Matt. Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah. Matt, I would like to ask you for some clarification because I feel like, you know, people tend to talk past each other because, you know, this term is brought up, the burden of proof. So I would love you to help me understand it, because I know that you understand, you know, philosophy more than other atheist activists. So usually the question is, you know, what you believe and why you believe, and more importantly, why you believe what you believe, right? So yeah. I guess when you ask why you believe, you ask the person epistemology, right? Why? What is the reason for the conclusion they have? Right. And you ask why we should believe what you believe is about the persuasion. So when you talk about the burden of proof, are you talking about the burden of justification for self-validation of one's belief, or you talk about the burden of persuasion?
So the burden of proof applies from an epistemological standpoint, but it's also about persuasion. There's no reason why it's not both, because what we're basically saying is, I believe that, I don't know, children are our future. And when you ask me why, I'll give you a reason. Now, that reason is intended to show why I have good reason to believe this. It is also there to perhaps persuade you that you should also believe this as well. The burden of proof, though, is straight up a function of epistemology. But you should be convinced by good and sound epistemology. So in that sense, it's about persuasion as well.
Yeah. So in that sense, then do you think that you know, both sides have the burden of proof, or just the one who
Both sides of what? Anybody making a claim, has adopted a burden of proof. If you haven't made a claim, you can't possibly have a burden of proof.
Yeah. I feel like if I was to tell you there's a leprechaun in my car right now, there's no burden of proof for you to show me why that's not the case. I've introduced a proposition at which I'm going to have some epistemic justification. I need something to justify it.
And if I were to say, J. Mike's full of shit, there's no leprechaun in the trunk of his car, I've now made a claim that shows that I need to demonstrate I've adopted a burden of proof. But if I just say, I'm not convinced that J. Mike has a leprechaun in his car, I've got no burden of proof.
So for J. Mike, when you said, you know, your garage have a leprechaun, and I said that, well, I don't believe that, and you asked me why, and then I say, because in my entire life, I never see something remotely, you know, that describe what you describe about the leprechaun. So sure. In that sense, like, my justification is why I don't believe what you say, right? So I mean, I meet my burden.
Well, so, Well, so you have to be careful, right?
I'm trying to convince you, right?
You have to be careful, because you wouldn't want to take a positive claim and say that's not the case, because then you commit yourself to a black swan fallacy. And the aspect of the second we can show that, then we can show your reasoning to be faulty. But you know, if I come to you with the claim that a leprechaun exists in my car, then there's a difference between having some implicit basis. I've heard Matt use the example of getting a new puppy or a cat, right? We have an implicit empirical basis at which we can accept somebody's claim, and they could go as far as like putting fur around the house in a bowl, you know, with food in it. And then we could just find out that they're actually just lying to you, right? This is a big elaborate scheme. And in that case, well, then I just now from that perspective, I need to raise my standards of evidence, especially with that given agent in terms of the claims that they make. But it still doesn't negate the fact that we have an implicit basis for that ontology, whether it's a cat or a dog or things like that. But when you introduce something like a leprechaun, I mean, we'd have no basis for that ontology in any sense. And so you're reasonable for not accepting the claim, right? But there's no burden on you. The burden's on me. I'm going to have to show some justification for the new ontology that I'm presenting. We don't have implicit basis. We don't have empirical basis. And that's what's going to be needed in order for me to justify. I don't know if you know about theory of knowledge. I'm not even sure if I agree with this definition. But some people break that down into three components: justified true belief. You need something that actually does the justification. Whether you want to get into extra stuff that might be needed for that, it's a separate thing. But that's not on the other person that's just not accepting the claims problem. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in an issue of having to prove a bunch of negatives on claims. And that's just, to me, backwards.
So Mike, then in daily conversation, so let's say that, you know, you meet a friend and they ask how you are doing. And you say that, you know, your life is have improved ever since, you know, you believe in some deity. Then when you just answer the question, you don't make, you know, the claim to convince the other person, your friend, and doesn't mean you don't have the burden of proof in that.
No. You have the burden of proof, but the fact that the burden of proof is on you doesn't mean that you're in any, like, I have a $100 bill in my wallet. I just made a claim. I've adopted a burden of proof. But I can also say, I don't give a shit if you believe me. I don't care to try to convince you. I can do that. The issue here is one phase is about whether or not your position is reasonable, whether or not it is justified and your position is reasonable to accept. But you can also say, I think it's reasonable, but I don't have any obligation to demonstrate to you. The burden of proof does not mean that you are somehow required to start offering up a defense. It just means that if you're asserting a position and you are claiming that it is reasonable, you need to demonstrate that it's reasonable, or nobody has any good reason to believe that it is.
Yeah. Otherwise, I could rival any hypothesis of anything. And if we don't have some criterion at which for us to be reasonably justified in, then I don't know how we don't have a problem of underdetermination for any claim at that point. And that seems to be a problem. But not even that. You went into, what if it helps somebody or has some emotional basis? Well, I talk to a lot of spiritualists that think crystals heal them. That has no indication on the independent attestation that's needed to show that there's a mechanism at which crystals actually heal you, for example. And so I would ask you, would you agree that we need some way to separate what you're convinced of versus the actual justification of, right? I mean, would you agree that that's an appropriate way to tackle a proposition?
I will say, you know, with my lack of philosophical knowledge, I would say for self, just
you don't need, well, I'm don't sorry know. Man, I'm sorry to cut you off, but you don't need to get into philosophy. Yeah. Here I feel like you utilize this method every day in your life, but people for some reason want to stop somewhere short when it comes to extraordinary claims, which is I guess typically what we deal with. So you don't need philosophy. You would agree that a mechanism to determine what you're convinced of versus the actual independent evidence is probably a reasonable way to go about it, correct?
Yes, I think if you ask me, like, do I have a reason to believe in whatever claim I have, then I would say I do. But I guess if you ask a justification, then yes, it may not be substantiated because I cannot persuade you, you know, that I am wrong.
Why not?
And is that the question?
So the question is, when you say something like you can't persuade me, now you've just made a claim where you are asserting that whatever reason you have wouldn't convince me. And let's assume for a second that that's true. Then my question is, then why do you believe it? Because if you're believing something for reasons that you recognize other people wouldn't accept, I'd be interested to know why you believe it. But if you, in fact, you have good reasons, why do you think that it wouldn't convince us?
I think probably because with something like only, let's say like, you know, you tell me that you have a headache because I'm not in your mind. I cannot understand much of how it feels like, but even if you can demonstrate me, you know,
that's not remotely what we're talking about. This isn't just a state of mind. We're talking about whether or not somebody believes in a God, whether or not somebody believes in something that is outside of them. It's not just an opinion. Like, how did you feel when you ate that ice cream? Well, I felt really good. I don't believe you. You're a liar. Well, nobody does that. There's no reason to even go down that path. But if you say, I believe that there's a God who transcends space and time, who cares whether or not we masturbate and who we marry, and we say, why? And you say, well, my reasons wouldn't convince you. Then we're back to what I was asking, which is, if you don't think your reasons would convince us, why should they convince you?
I understand now. So I guess for some people, it's, you know, all the reason, but it cannot justify it. Yeah.
All right. I hope that helped a lot, Min. We got a bunch of callers to get to, but thanks for calling. It was good to hear from you again.
Yeah. And I would just add at the end.
Thank you so much for your explanation.
If you're not convinced, if you don't have good reason in that sense, then what stops you from accepting any rival claim? If you don't have a method to distinguish the two, then it seems that almost you have the same method to accept two contradictory positions. And at that case, that seems to prompt a need for some mechanism to tell the difference between the two.
Okay, I see. Okay, yes, sir. Thank you so much for your help.
Yeah, thanks, no problem.
Man. All right. So, we jump right into calls, and we do that for a lot of reasons because I want to make sure people are showing up and not missing everything. But it's important also to remember that we have to pay the bills and everything. So if you are watching us live on YouTube right now, first of all, thank you. We love the fact that you're engaging in chat. We hope that some of you will call or encourage other people to call as well. But there's a donate link directly below the chat box, which is live during the show. Please remember to click like and subscribe. But if you would donate your donations, 100% of them go directly to the ACA and help promote this program and Talk Heathen and Truth Wanted and Secular Sexuality and Nonprofits and all the other efforts that the ACA is engaged in, not the least of which I talked about in a recent video about volunteerism, where we've worked with countless other organizations. If you want, there's also the possibility of getting merchandise. If you go to bit.ly/AENmerch, that's where you can get your coffee cups and t-shirts and other things like that. You can also become a member here at YouTube, which gets you, fancy individual icons. And maybe it skips slow mode. I haven't verified that yet at all. But also at patreon.com/theatheistexperience, you can go there to support this channel as well. And there are a couple of Facebook groups. Is that like the old pokes? It used to be pokes and now they're gropes.
Yeah.
Facebook groups. There's the Atheist Experience fan group. And then there's also the Atheist Experience private fan group. And in addition, there's the ACA Discord, which we promote as well. And I think, J-Mark, are you hanging out in the Discord after the show's over?
I am indeed. Yeah. I got a lot of time until I head off to work, so I'd love to.
Awesome. Well, what do you say we get to another call here?
Let's do it.
Joel in Alabama wants to talk about how reincarnation is compatible with materialism. Hey, Joel, welcome. You might want to start by telling us exactly what you mean by reincarnation, because without a definition, this could get really hairy.
Okay, I will. Can I mention my blog on here?
I guess. I mean, it'd be nice if you showed an interest in an actual discussion before you started showing an interest in self-promotion, but I can't stop you from saying stuff.
Okay, it's Susurrus Waking. That's Susurrus Waking. Okay, I define reincarnation as the recurrence of most basic awareness. And so, for instance...
Wait, one more time?
Recurrence of most basic awareness.
Of most basic awareness. Okay.
Yes. So, for instance, if I say, it occurs to me I should wash my car. It occurs to what? It occurs to my most basic awareness. So most basic awareness is the awareness to which thoughts and sensations occur. That begins, my hypothesis is it begins when I'm an infant or an infant in the womb, and that will begin to exist in a baby after my death. And so even if I'm annihilated, that most basic awareness will begin to exist in another baby after my death. And since I was that awareness, I will be that awareness again.
Okay. So first of all, you're talking about a hypothesis. I have zero interest in your hypothesis because it's just bald ass speculation. There's no evidence for it. But when you define most basic awareness, there's a difference between, would you agree that there's a difference between your most basic awareness and my most basic awareness?
Yes, but I think it occurred. Yes, but I'm not.
It's a yes or no question. It's a yes or no question, not a yes, but.
There could be. I don't know.
Holy shit. Joel, either you agree with me that your most basic awareness and my most basic awareness are different, or you don't agree with me.
I don't know.
Do you think that my most basic awareness and your most basic awareness are the same?
Yes.
Well, you're wrong. They're not. You don't have my awareness and I don't have yours. I have no idea what it's like to be you, to experience you, your thoughts at all. I'm experiencing my own thoughts. And the fact that you and I are in disagreement right now proves the point.
Well, do you believe when I say it occurs to me I should wash my car,
it did not occur to me that I should wash my car, and it did not occur to me that you should wash your car, which demonstrates conclusively that your most basic awareness and my most basic awareness are not the same.
It's the same kind of mechanism.
I don't give a shit if it's the same kind of mechanism. That's like saying I have thoughts and you have thoughts. If you're going to argue for reincarnation, they need to be that your thoughts are my thoughts. That's okay. Not reincarnation. That's a separate 25 individual incarnations is not reincarnation. Reincarnation is a new incarnation of the same awareness.
Yeah, you're talking about something you're talking about something that's being passed down, and you're saying the awareness, and then you're adding the caveat that it's compatible with materialism. Okay, well, if it's compatible with materialism, let's try to work this out from a materialistic worldview, in the sense of that we're gonna be deriving novel future predictions for things that we do. So how do you have any basis of a prediction at which you could confirm this? Because like Matt said, it seems just to be some assertion.
Okay,
based off the fact that we have similar biological functions, which is not enough.
Well, okay, let me say this. I'm not the same thing I was 10 years ago, so I don't have to be the same thing in the next life I was in this life. So it doesn't have to be a recurrence of the same thing.
It's not reincarnation. The fact that one person exists, and when they cease to exist, a different person exists, that is not reincarnation. Reincarnation requires a new incarnation of the previous agent.
It has, yes. Okay, well, here's way we can do this.
Okay.
Let's say there are different types of most basic awareness.
I don't know what that means.
I reincarnate.
I don't know what that means, okay. And I don't know how it proves your case. You've already debunked your own case.
Do you believe that you're unique?
Yes.
You're completely unique.
I'm as unique as I can imagine. I don't know of anything that is identical to me, and that would violate the law of identity for there to be two things that were identical that are also independent. So yes, I am unique, if for no other reason than I am the only agent occupying this particular spatial location.
Okay. Like I said, well, if I die, then I'm annihilated and my most basic awareness can recur in another baby.
No, okay. Sir. You don't just get, first of all, if you die, we don't necessarily know whether or not you're annihilated. But even if you are annihilated, you don't get to just assert that your most basic awareness can occur in another baby. That's the whole thing that we're trying to demonstrate. You do not just get to claim it's possible and then ride that like a wild fucking dragon. You don't. You have to demonstrate it.
Yeah. What stops me from saying something similar with maybe a few derivations and just change a little bit? What stops me from doing that? Because I use the exact same epistemic justification, which is none. And we can't tell the difference between both of our claims. So what is being passed down, and what's the mechanism that you use to, because otherwise we're not talking about reincarnation. You're going to have to give some reason, something in the future to tell that that's what that is. Do you have a model? Do you have anything?
Well, there could be brain scans.
You keep saying there could be. Do you actually have something? I don't care about the could be's and the hypotheses. I care about what you actually have.
I have looked on the internet and it shows that different people experience emotions in different ways, but there are different types of ways of experiencing emotions.
I've looked on the internet too, and there are people who think the earth is flat and all kinds of stuff. So let's start with your most basic awareness. First of all, demonstrate that what you're calling your most basic awareness could possibly exist outside of your specific brain.
Well, for the same reason it exists inside my brain now.
No, sir.
It simply does.
No, sir, you're not listening. Demonstrate that it is possible for it to exist outside of your brain.
Oh, it can't exist outside of my brain, but it can exist.
Then you just admitted that your notion of reincarnation is not possible.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you absolutely did, because you just said that your most basic awareness cannot exist outside of your unique brain, which means it can exist in no other brain, and that refutes your position.
The same song, you think the same song can play on two different radios?
Joel, you're not listening, and so now I'm done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
I was going to let you keep talking to J Mike, but if you're just going to give up like that, cool.
Well, yeah, I think that you kind of showed the fault in that. There's no point to repeat.
Yeah. Do you think the same song can play on different radios? Yes, I do.
Because they're physically different things.
Yeah. It's not technically the same song. It's two different radios playing the same transmission, but it's different sound waves. The two different speakers, or however many different speakers you have, are vibrating different air molecules, and they're being heard by different ears. First of all, we don't even know. Whatever it is that he's calling his most basic awareness, I don't know whether or not it can only exist in his unique brain or not. And neither does he. But he's simultaneously claiming that it can't exist in another brain and that it must, in order for his argument about reincarnation to be.
My thing on it was that the caveat of materialism, because then at that point you're basically saying, well, we can derive predictions on this. We can create a model. Okay, yeah. Do that, then call back. Otherwise, it's kind of like what you said on the show. I think Talk Heathen with Me is like we can hit the bong and talk about this type of stuff all day, and that's great. Yeah. But I'm kind of past that. You know,
the whole point of the show is to get people talking about what they believe and why, and if they have a good reason, cool, address it. And if they don't have a good reason, then we point that out. And so Joel's reason for believing in reincarnation is apparently about a monumental, gross conceptual error about his own most basic awareness and what it can and can't do, to the point where he's even contradicted himself. I tell you what, we got two calls down, and I want to make sure that I mention that in addition to the Atheist Experience fan group, there's also an atheist versus theist debate group. And so if Joel or somebody else wants to engage with people, you can go to AXP Fan Debates, and there are people there who want to have those conversations. And maybe if we missed something on the show here, or maybe you did, that can be cleared up there as well. Also, in addition to the Atheist Experience, there are a number of other shows that air, one of which is The Nonprofits, which airs Sundays at 3 p.m. with new hosts and new segments right between Talk Heathen and Atheist Experience. And if you weren't aware of that show and you weren't aware of Truth Wanted or Secular Sexuality, you can go to tiny.cc/AENpodcasts. That's your one-stop destination for all of our shows as audio-only podcasts. Something many people have been asking for. How can I get AXP as audio-only? You can get them all there. All the programs, some of which you didn't even know about, give them a listen. And the reason that you can get them there, and the reason that people are seeing these messages, even though I did things in an order that was slightly different from a couple weeks ago, is because of the amazing crew that is working behind the scenes all the time, who actually worked through a tech issue in like the last 2.5 minutes. So yes, we're aware that J. Mike's green screen is green. We like it that way. It's pretty.
Yeah, I chose this color. I figured it matches.
But we've got a bunch of callers. There's the crew right there. I knew they'd get themselves up there eventually. They're all waving. Oh my God, even Greg is here. It's scary. And there's Crew Cat, you know, situated. I thought that was Hikaru there for a second, but it was clearly not. So yeah, we've got a bunch of callers, and we want to be sure that we mention that the people in the chat who are participating along with the show are greatly appreciated. We appreciate the donations that have come in that have helped out, and the engagement here. We're Rocky. You ready for more?
I'm always ready.
Sweet. So we have Sain, who wants to know what we think about religion. So welcome to the show, Sain.
Hey guys. Oh man, so I just want to say, I think I should probably ask, are we trying to make this call really short? I just remembered the show started pretty fast, and I thought I heard something about, like, you guys just want to get through calls. I might have just misheard that.
Oh, Well, look, I would prefer to get as many callers as we can, but we want to, we're fine with doing longer calls if that's what's needed to help educate the caller or us or the audience. So just, let's just address your issue. And it takes as long as it takes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you guys. So I'm not going to personally accuse you guys of this, but I have heard some hosts on the show say that, you know, the world would be better off without religion. I might not have even understood completely what they meant by that, but I did want to ask you guys, do you guys hate religion in any way at all? Or and if you do, is it possible you more so are just, you hate what it produces in people? I don't know. I just like your thoughts about that.
So I'm going to let J Mike jump in on this, but I think probably we should start with you defining what you mean by religion.
Yep.
With religion, I would say, I don't know. I'm so sorry. I probably should have known what definition I was using of religion before I called.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Jim. I'll jump in later.
Sure. So from what religion produces, maybe I can start there. I more so want to take it on its smaller components of beliefs in general that deal with things that we don't have a basis for in reality. Now, someone could like argue that, you know, the religion gives me some methodological utility in my life, or I can, you know, the metaphors help me or something. And that's fine if that helps them. But what I care about is whether things are actually true. I don't really care about the extra fluff that's in with that from my perspective. And what I don't like is that we have an extremely successful method in navigating the world and having at least some basis of understanding at what surrounds us. And it bothers me that in almost every religious claim, well, not every, I won't say, but a lot of the religious claims that come up, that come my way, is that they want to sidestep a very rigorous process that could actually get us there. And that bothers me in the sense that if I had said stars don't actually fuse up to iron, elements up to iron, like that was a metaphor. We were wrong about that. Like no religious person's going to accept that. They're going to go, no, you were wrong. You had this standard. And so it almost seems to be this like double playing two sides in a way where we have this method, we could apply it for the claims at which religious people espouse. And then once it comes to that, they want to sidestep that. That's more my bother from the belief aspect that bothers me. I'm not here to tell people what they can or cannot believe in, but you know, I want to at least try to walk down the routes of justifying the belief in the first place rather than the meta of the religion.
Yeah. And for me, I'm a skeptic, I'm a humanist, and I'm an atheist. And as a skeptic, I object to magical thinking and beliefs that are a lack of sound foundation. By and large, what you find in most religions, most religious packages, and religion is a difficult word to, but I think we can probably use it fairly here. Because religions can inspire people to do good things and be good. Religions can also inspire people to do harm and to be evil. As a matter of fact, there's a quote from Weinberg that says, without religion, good people would do good things and evil people would do evil things. But it takes something quite like religion to get good people to do evil things. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. Because, and Voltaire, the famous quote from Voltaire is, if you can get people to believe absurdities, you can get them to commit atrocities. Because without that sort of motivation that God is on your side, or God wants you to kill these people, or God wants you to marginalize these people, God wants you to legislate away these people's rights, without that sort of motivation, you would have to do what the rest of us have to do. And I don't mean you specifically, I mean anybody. And that is, make an evidence-based secular case for why we should take a certain action. I don't look at religion and just go, oh, religion bad. I look at religions and religious claims and analyze the beliefs to determine whether or not they are good and whether or not they are warranted, or belief in them is warranted. And I look at the actions taken on behalf of it. It is undeniable that people, good people, on behalf of their religion, have done good things, building universities, building hospitals, donating to the poor, trying to help out the homeless, anything. There are good things that are done on behalf of religion. However, religion isn't required for any of those. And when you add religion to it, you are now adding bullshit baggage that diminishes both the effectiveness of it and with religious organizations not having to open their books to the public, a secular charity that does is always going to be preferable to me than a religious charity that does not, because I want to know what percentage of the dollar that I donate is going actually to the people in need and how much of it is going to overhead. And that's why there's differences in charities. So do I hate religion? Not really. Do I hate many things about religions? You betcha. Do I hate religious people? Nope, not at all. Do I hate a lot of the things that religious people do? Yes, I do. I hope that answers your question.
Man, it really did. And I just want to say thank you so much, guys. Every time I go in Austin and I see the Freethought Library closed up, I'm just like, oh man, I'm really excited for the community to get back together again, you know? But I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to answer my question.
Sure. Could I add something for you real quick? Maybe something for you to think about? Think about religion in the sense of that they provide a belief system for people. They don't really provide a system of knowledge. They don't explain or predict any observed facts. So it's anybody can create a system of belief. If you don't take it seriously beyond that, then it's hard to take you seriously. Not you specifically, but the person espousing the claims.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Zane.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you, Jay Mark. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Take care. All right. Let's talk to an atheist, a fellow godless heathen. Anthony in Florida is a recent deconvert who's having a little trouble letting go. So welcome, Anthony. How can J-Mike and I help you out?
Hey, Matt. Hey, J-Mike. How are you?
Good.
Doing well.
Good. I guess if it's okay, I'd like to kind of, it would help if I gave you a little backstory on me and kind of where I come from.
Sure. Let's try and keep it to where it's not, you know, like an hour.
Yeah, definitely. I'll try and keep it brief. I was born into an evangelical Christian family as the grandson of two apostolic Pentecostal pastors, so very Bible literalist, hardcore fundamentalist belief. Yep.
Are your grandparents still alive?
My grandfather passed away a few years ago, but my grandmother is still alive, and she's
okay.
95 years old now.
Yeah.
It's on my mother's side. So growing up, I enjoyed a lot of like the aspects of the church, like community, relationships, you know, a sense of involvement, feeling that, you know, at the time, a confidence that I was like contributing to something like much greater than me. I never really thought about or trying to define God through anything more than what I had been indoctrinated to believe. I wasn't really taught the way of questioning my beliefs with skepticism. Doubt's kind of a no-no in the Christian doctrine. I know, Matt, just from years of watching the show now, you're kind of familiar with that.
Yeah.
My parents met at Bible college, moved back to my mom's state of Ohio, and they began to raise a family. They had me and my two other brothers, then moved to Florida to be closer to my mom's parents, the grandparents that were ministers after they retired from the church. And then they got divorced, my parents, about 20 years ago. I'm gay, and I am out to most everyone in my entire circle, except some of my mom's family, the religious side. My dad, ironically, is also gay. That's the reason my parents divorced years ago, so he's obviously supportive. Late 2017, I discovered your show, Atheist Experience, and I binged the archive episodes as much as I possibly could. Getting ready for work, my commute to and from work, cleaning the house. The brand new way of considering things was exciting, and I felt like almost every episode there was an argument from another caller that I would have also used to defend my beliefs.
Yeah.
And while I enjoyed hearing the fresh perspectives and learning new concepts, it was also terrifying to discover that I had been taught or what I had been taught my entire life and pretty much what shaped my identity up until that point was a lie. Thanks to the show and the various hosts that have been a part of the program throughout the years, I was able to critically examine my beliefs. And as painful as it was, I'm now a non-believer.
Wow, welcome.
I am, however, still... Yeah, I appreciate it. And I found a lot of, even just virtually found a lot of acceptance, even though I haven't really corresponded with a lot of people. I've just found that the community itself can be really accepting.
Yeah.
I am, however, still having to let I'm having difficulty fully letting go, even though everything using rationality and reason is telling me I should, because there is such a strong family tie woven into the religion. And it's almost part of, and I guess you could just put this in quotation marks, heritage. The emotional bond stemming from my grandparents, who were phenomenal people, who sincerely held these beliefs, it's hard to untangle that from the religion. I always had expectations from family that I'd become a preacher or a pastor or a worship leader, and I was really heavily involved when I was a part of the church. And while I've stepped away from the church and its teachings, there is even almost a sense of guilt for discarding all of that. And I would even love to be an active member in the atheist community. I really like to volunteer and help. And it would eventually like to speak to other people in my shoes to help them find their way out. But I can't help but at this time feel like I would be like tearing down all their work, my grandparents, that they dedicated their lives to.
What's wrong with that?
Emotional conflict to work. What's wrong with?
I can appreciate the fact that you think you might be tearing down the work that your grandparents did their whole life, but what's wrong with that?
I guess it's hard for me. I mean, this is maybe another part of it, but it is hard to accept that they dedicated their entire lives in a sincere and honest way. They dedicated their entire lives to something that was totally untrue. Like it's hard for me to imagine that much waste. And, I just think of it as a really, really sad situation. So
fast. You said that you want to help, like you would want to get in the community and help and things like that, but it sounds like you're biting on the bullet for the sake of, which it's commendable in a way, but I mean, how long are you going to do that and prevent some good that could come out of it? I mean, what if you're the voice that helps a lot of people and you kind of wait on that for, you know, somebody else's sake? I don't know if that's fair to you. You know, you're already going through the process of having this kind of tear your world down, so to speak, right? And so I don't know why you'd want to bite that bullet for them in that sense.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to explain. I guess just being really close with them and being partially raised by them, it would feel almost like a betrayal. But I guess that's just being. I guess I have to actually learn how to fully separate what is family and what is emotional from what is just a construct.
Yeah. When I was asking you what was wrong with that, I wasn't suggesting that there wasn't something wrong with it. I wanted to know what your thoughts were about that. And in many cases, I can completely understand there are things that might feel like a betrayal of family, irrespective of their actual beliefs. It's like, I don't spend time arguing with my mom about religion anymore. She knows my position. I'm not hiding anything from her. We've had arguments about it. But also my grandmother, on my dad's side, she wrote me a wonderful letter about how she believed. And I opted to never really have a detailed conversation with her, not because I was afraid to talk her out of her religion or anything else. It's just that my relationship with my grandmother was worth more to me than whether or not she believed. And it was clear to her, it was clear to me, that my grandmother loved me dearly, whether I believed or not, and that whether my disbelief was not in any way going to impact whether or not she and I could sit around and play cards and bullshit and talk with each other. And when she told me that she was voting for Hillary in 2016 because she couldn't stand Trump, despite what the rest of the family might have thought, it was all great moments. So that's the only reason I was asking. What I will say is it gets easier over time. And you're going to reach a point where you are completely comfortable with who you are and what you're doing and to what extent you are an activist with regard to secularism at all. In the same way that you're going to reach a point where you're comfortable with how comfortable you are as an activist with regard to gay rights issues. Family is tricky and we cut them a lot of slack. And I fully expect that you would. I do. I don't see that there's anything wrong with cutting them some slack. But if I was worried, I come from a long line of preachers and deacons and things like that. It never occurred to me that I say, I feel like I'm undermining the work they did, and that's a problem, because I'm fucking thrilled to be undermining the work they did and the work that I did. And I can still love them and appreciate them and their beliefs while I'm, or their right to their beliefs while I am actively undermining.
Yeah. Interestingly, at around 2017, because you mentioned like the gay thing, and that's something I've had to work through. In 2017, I became like fully comfortable with and open about my sexuality, which was a tremendous hurdle after growing up in the church and enduring all the psychological trauma from their opinions about homosexuality. And as a child being told, you know, God hates that, et cetera. And while that was a huge like feat and liberating to overcome, you know, now at that time, like late 2017, when I discovered, you know, atheism and learned the truth about that was, aside from what my church taught me atheism was, and it was a whole new world. You know, I had all of this to examine and reevaluate my entire belief system. So it was like I conquered a hill only to have a mountain on the other side. So yeah. Like it was a whole other level of examining, you know, I was comfortable with my sexuality, and then I got over that. And then it was this whole other thing, which made my world then really, fall apart. Because I had invested my entire life and been taught to invest everything in my life to dedicate it to that religion. I guess I have to think about it in a way that I would be ultimately working to accomplish something good, by kind of tearing down what, even though they had good intentions, like, and I know you mentioned it on the previous call, they were missionaries to Thailand for 30 years. They were pastors. You know, every time they did a mission trip, they take a suitcase of their own clothes and go take them over there and give them to the people there. They did good things and they helped a lot of people, but,
my uncle was a medical missionary to Thailand, many years ago. It's possible that they know each other, that they worked with the same groups, doing mission trips there. That would be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I say, cut yourself some slack, Anthony. You are both a decent person, a fine, secularist, and someone who doesn't want to offend or bother the people in your family who value you. And all of those are good things.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. I think I just have to place not so much emphasis on, is it going to affect, or what am I doing to my family? It's more of, I am doing something good now that I know there is something better out there.
You got to be a little selfish. I mean, you put yourself through some of this, or not put yourself through, but you had to go through some of this in virtue of those claims. And I mean, you could do some good from that perspective of helping someone very similar in your shoes. But you know, I don't know how much you have to take the worst of that. You know, before it's gonna, from my perspective, I had a similar situation where people around me, like my friends and things, I didn't want to, because I didn't grow up more in the religious aspect. It was more the spiritual, you know, new age stuff. And it was weird for me because I felt like I'd lose a lot of friends, or people would, you know, for the same criticisms I gave to science or things, that I would be kind of casted in that light. And all it did was prevent me. It slow down myself. And I wish years ago I would have picked up a book sooner, right? I wish I would have cared about school. I wish I would have done so much more. And all I did was prevent myself from growing by trying to be nice about it. And at some point, you just got to throw that to the side. I mean, you're a good person. There's no question about that from hearing your call. But and you put yourself, you've been put through hell in that perspective. I'd try to turn that around as best as you can and reflect that on someone else, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can kind of use it as ammunition to really strive for something good, like all of the baggage, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you have direct access to what it feels like to have that, you know, that experience. And if anybody comes to you with those kind of problems, I mean, you're going to be able to immediately relate to that. And the sooner that you start navigating in that area, the sooner you can provide some answers for people to postulate. I mean, no, you know, I always take the idea that as a skeptic, listen, don't even listen to everything I say and take it. Go look at the independent reasons beyond what I just say, because that's going to be, you know, I want everybody to question what I say in every aspect, even if it comes off like, oh, you're just, you think you know everything, which, you know, people get in this. I feel like if you're a skeptic, you've gotten that from people from opposition. And it's like, no, question what I say, because, you know, the truth has nothing to fear from investigation. And the second you can acknowledge that and help people, the arguments are going to do the work. You're not breaking down your family or anything because of anything you did. These arguments stand on their own for the validity that they have. And so, you know, any like me, Matt, or anybody else, we're, you know, a lot of the times it's not like we're just popping this shit out in our head. It's, you know, these are arguments that work. They have some, they're sound. They have some basis, and they're independent of how I feel about it.
Yep. I tell you, I think we lost.
Oh,
Anthony. Yeah.
So now we're not the good people now. So,
yeah. but it looks like we still have all the other callers. So I think maybe Anthony may have disconnected. But by the way, Anthony, by all means, reach out to Recovering from Religion. Reach out to the Psychotherapy Project. Find some interactive people on our Discord or other places where you can interact to get more feedback on, you know, and call us back and let us know how you're doing and everything. Daniel in New Jersey, you're on the air with Jay, Mike, and Matt, and you want to tell us how the source of reality is God. So welcome.
That's right. Hi, Jay, Mike, and hi, Matt. So I guess that is my argument, or I will be presenting an argument that God is that which emanates reality all the time. And in order to do that, I guess the best way to start would be to try to explain what I'm talking about when I say God.
I would also want you to define reality as well.
Okay. So I'll start with reality first then. Reality is the ever-changing eternal now that is the present, that this is all, like, this being all that exists is reality as we are observing it in the present now. Is that a sufficient?
Yeah, it's going to prompt questions, but I mean, it's great because we at least have a definition. So if you want to define God, maybe we can get to some questions.
Okay, perfect. So I'd like to try to point to God in experience, in our awareness of reality. So for me, God is on the other side of the reality that we are experiencing now. He is that which creates the present, and nature being that which evolved, the rules according to which nature evolves would be God's nature. And I guess also the idea that God created in the past the universe would be changed to God creates the universe and it emanates into the present.
So the problem with your God definition, Daniel, is that your God definition includes the very thing you're trying to argue for. You defined God as that which creates the present. So if you start with premise one, God is that which creates the present, and the whole argument is designed to show that God is that which emanates reality, your argument is absolutely, undeniably, irrefutably circular. So you have to have a different definition of God in order to use that. But before we let you redefine God, let's take this, all that exists. What does it mean to say that this is emanated? How do you know that something, that reality can be emanated, and how could you tell that it is emanated?
The reason I believe it's emanated is that the present is all that exists. There is no past, like past and future are conceptual, but all that exists is the now. And it is both the present moment in time, but it's also eternal. There is no other time. And so if right now what we're looking at is the ever-evolving present, it kind of invites us to take a different model, a different view of the world that, well, it's not just that this is some flow of time from past to future. This is all just now, happening now.
Daniel, I don't disagree with any of that strongly. I don't know how that gets you to it is emanated. I'm fine with it. There's lots of different ways to look at time. Alan Watts had versions of time that related to, you know, we're seeing parts of time as a snake and it's a circle disc and all this other thing. Irrespective of which view of time is correct, I'm fine with the notion that now is all that exists. And that, by the way, we don't experience now. We experience a recollection of the now that was before and all that other stuff. All of that is absolutely fine. But I don't see how you got from here's my view of time to therefore it is something that is emanated from something or someone.
I think you're absolutely right. I definitely didn't justify that. I think I can try, without redefining God, I would rather try to use a different argument. And the argument is just that this conception of God fits religious beliefs and provides another way to interpret reality. We could say that.
No. So now you've tried. I should just stop you, Daniel, and let you go off and try to rework this and come back at another time, because the arguments and definitions that you're using today can't possibly do that. And even in your attempt here to redefine God, you didn't then define God as a conception that fits religious beliefs and allows us to. No. That's you redefining God to fit a model, rather than demonstrating that there is any such God, when even the God in that model can't demonstrate the emanates portion of your argument. So I think it's probably better for you to go off and think about this, come up with the definitions and come up with a better argument rather than trying to do it on the fly, because it's just going to get messy.
Yeah, and I'd compare it also to what's called a panacea. It seems that you're providing a remedy for all cures, right? It seems like you're post hoc assessing, you're looking at the data and then going, oh, well, this fits that. And I've probably said this too many times on the show, but I'm very concerned with ideas that don't provide a model or future predictions, because it's just your imagination until you give me a mechanism to determine it being reflective of the reality we share. And if you just cite things like, oh, well, I view time this way, I take an A theory or B theory of time or whatever it is, like, we could agree, but I don't understand taking that data and then just kind of sneaking in some ontology like God or whatever it might be. I don't see the relation there.
Saying this is how I view time and I think it's emanated by God is logically indistinguishable from this is how I view biology and I think God is the explanation for it, which is also indistinguishable from these are the foundations of logic and I think God serves as the underpinning for it. It's neat that you think that, but we got to have better definitions in an argument.
Well, okay then. Thank you for pointing out the weaknesses, and I will reassess and regroup, and I'd like to call again soon. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Happy to repeatedly take calls from anybody who goes down that path like that. Chris in Los Angeles wants to talk about his experiences led him to believe in God, and he thinks that I'm a little mad at God. Well, Chris, am I also a little mad at Voldemort?
I think it's just a biblical concept of God that you're not real happy with.
Well, that's why I asked a question that you didn't answer at all. But I tell you what, we'll just let that pass. That's your one free I'm not answering a question. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
I'll answer your question. I wanted to ask you a couple questions before I just gave you some background, probably, if me a little bit anyways. But one thing I wanted to know is I noticed that you read the book that you talked about on innumeracy. And I was wondering, do you have any math background?
Yes, I've taken math courses.
Do you have a lot? I'm just wondering.
No, I don't have a lot. I didn't know I was going to be interviewed on my background, Chris. How is this relevant to your experiences with a God and what you think about me and God? You know, if you wanted to do an interview, you should have booked something.
No, I was just trying to let you know that, I mean, I think that way. I'm not a big philosophy person, so I just wanted to give that as a background. And I was just, it was curious. It was
Chris, what the hell are you talking about? You just wanted to give that as a background. You just asked me questions about my understanding of math. How is that you giving me a background?
Well, it was knowing that I could relate to you on a mathematical level. I wanted to let you know that that's the way I think. There was no slight intended with that.
I'm not worried about a slight. I'm worried about you wasting everybody's fucking time and not getting to the point.
Okay. Well, I'll share with you. I've had several experiences. I was born.
Just do one. Just do one, Chris. One experience as quickly as you can.
Okay. I figured you'd want to see more evidence.
I want one so that we can discuss it. And you better start with your best, because if your best isn't good enough, the rest of them aren't going to be relevant, because personal anecdotes and experience aren't sufficient to warrant anyone else believing in a God, period.
I was just trying to give you evidence of a God. I'll give you the best one, but what I'm trying to say is, by logic, what I'm going to tell you, the rational to think about.
Please, Chris, stop with the preamble and get to the case.
Okay. All right. When I was a young man, I came to Christ, and after walking with God for a long time, well, actually, fairly short time when I really say that, it's only 3 years. One weekend, I was home with my father, and I was real disrespectful to him. And when I left, I knew that what I had done had opened. And this would be hard for you to understand, because you may not have an experience in it.
Chris.
I knew that it had brought.
Chris.
Yes.
Accuse me of not being able to understand one more fucking time. I dare you. Can you tell your story or not? You started off by telling the call screener that you think I'm mad at God. Then when I asked you to start justifying it, you quizzed me on my math background. Now you're trying to tell your story, and in the midst of your story, you're telling me what I can and can't understand. Can you read my fucking mind?
I'll finish it for you, okay?
Can you read my fucking mind, Chris?
No, I can't.
Then how on earth did you reach the conclusion that I won't understand?
Because I think when I start talking to you about certain things, I think it's going to be far-fetched for you to believe. But
hey, Chris,
whether or not I believe it is completely separate from whether or not I understand it. So are you going to stop addressing what goes on in my mind and tell your story, or am I moving on to another caller?
That's fine. I'll give you.
I know it's fine. Shut up and tell your story, which is a contradiction.
Present, because okay, you're adding so much fluff, and I really want to know what your argument for God is.
You said when you left after being disrespectful to your father, you said that you knew what you had done, and you stopped there when you decided to say that I wouldn't understand it. So what did you know?
Okay. I knew that what I had done had brought a demonic presence into my life. I could feel it. And so I knew it was there, and so I came in. And I was in the dorms at that time, and I laid down on my bed and went to sleep. And when I went to sleep, I didn't go to sleep, I'm sorry. Got me nervous a little bit here. I just had shoulder surgery, but I didn't go to sleep, but I laid down on my bed, and I could feel the demonic presence in the room. And so what I thought to myself was, I prayed, and I asked the Lord in my heart, you know, to remove the demonic presence out of my room. And it didn't happen. I could still feel it. And so what ended up happening, and I was used to some of this stuff happening when I was younger. And so what I ended up doing is I ended up sitting there in the dark, and I asked the Lord to protect me. And I felt his presence on me, and I felt protected. And so that there I was sitting in the dark, wide awake, and the door opens up, and my roommate comes in, and he goes in and lays down on his bed, and he goes to sleep. And as I'm sitting there, he makes a big noise, and he comes up out of his bed a little bit. You know, he raises up like he's disturbed. And I laugh at him, because I'm thinking to myself, you know, this guy here calls me a restless sleeper, you know. And so as I'm sitting there, I start to think to myself, you know, maybe the demonic presence that I felt in this room and in feeling in this room is bothering him. So I start to pray for him. I think to myself, maybe I ought to go over there and lay hands on him. But then I thought, no, if he gets up in the middle of the night, he's going to think I'm crazy, and it's going to freak him out. So I sit there and I start praying, and nothing happens. It's still there. So I think to myself, you know, it's because of me that this presence is in here. Maybe I ought to get up and go to the library and let him just work so he could sleep at least. So as I do that, as I'm thinking that, I'm sitting on the bed. Before that, though, I'm praying, and I'm praying for him when he made that noise. And I pray for a little while, and I stop, and I think to myself, I'm just too weak. I felt weak because of the rebellion. I just didn't feel like I had, I guess if you want to use the word faith, to be able to move the demonic forces the way. So I'm
wrap it up.
And I did it three times. I just feel too weak. I just do feel a little weak. And I get up, and the next thing you know, I'm about to walk out the door, and he gets up and walks to his desk. He gets out of the thing. He has this weird look on his face, and I look at him. His name was Jason. I said, "Hey, Jason, are you okay?" And he turns and looks at me and says, "Didn't you go to the library?" And I said, "No." And he said, "You did come over here and pray for me, right?" And I said, "No, not in the physical. I sure didn't." He said, "I know it was you." He said, "You came over here and you put your hands on me and you prayed." And he said, "After you prayed a little while, you looked up at me and you said, 'I just can't. I'm too weak.'" He said, "Chris, this happened several times."
Chris.
Yes, yes, sir.
Do you think that anybody hearing this story should believe in God based on this story?
No, I mean, I told
you. Then why the fuck are you telling it? If you wanted to present evidence, if you present evidence, evidence is designed and is the sort of thing, like, if you presented evidence, someone should believe it. You're not presenting evidence. You're telling me a story, just like someone who tells me they were abducted by aliens. There is no way to verify any of this. There's no way. There's no reason to believe that you are accurately representing it. There's no reason to believe that even if it happened, that there's a God involved. This is beyond a big waste of time.
Yeah, and you bastardized logic and mathematics at the beginning to provide no set of inference rules that get you from your premises to your conclusion, just a story of an anecdotal testimony, at which I could just deny. So I don't know why you even prefaced and had that whole thing about the mathematics and logic when this was like, there's literally no inference rules at which you're applying.
Well, I was demonstrating a physical reality that happened.
No, you weren't. No, you weren't. You were telling a story. If you want to demonstrate a physical reality, you demonstrate with evidence, not anecdotes.
Well, God's not going to be a monkey that you're going to be able to just pull out and say, "Here you go, dance for everybody." But
whose fault is that, Chris? If God exists and wants people to know he exists, then either he presents evidence and reasonable evidence for his existence or he doesn't. And you're now saying that God doesn't present reasonable evidence, which means that you cannot possibly have a good reason to believe, and neither can anyone else. So thanks for admitting that. You're a true champion of Jesus.
That's your
next.
Oh, I don't know how many times I've heard a story. Am I supposed to accept them all? I don't know. Is that epistemic? Is that how epistemic justification works? It's just stories.
I'm confused. So I took really good notes. He's a young man. He came to Christ. He walked with God for 3 years. On a weekend, he went home and was disrespectful to his dad. And when he left, he knew he'd brought a demonic presence into his life, something that Matt clearly wouldn't understand. You jackass. I was a Southern Baptist for most of my life. I understand exactly what you're talking about. I just don't think it's real. I don't think there is such a thing as a demonic presence. And I don't know how you would demonstrate that there's a demonic presence. You don't provide evidence for it. All you provide is a story. I have had relatives. My mom told me she saw the demon of alcoholism sitting on her father's shoulder. Should I believe her? Absolutely not. Should I believe that she experienced something and that she's trying her best to explain it? Sure, because my mom's not always a liar. It's, you know, everybody's going to lie from time to time. And I think she's honestly explained. But does that mean that I have good reason to believe that she saw a demon? No. Does it mean that my mom has good reason to believe she saw a demon? Absolutely not. Because the fact that you think you saw something and you can't verify it independently with anybody else means you don't have a good reason. And as the caller eventually admitted, if he thinks that God is someone who will not present evidence of his existence, then the caller can't be justified and neither can anybody else. I have all the other notes too. Went to bed, prayed, didn't happen. He was used to seeing these demonic things happen. It's weird that our caller was used to seeing demonic things happening, told us a story about demonic things happening, yet cannot provide any evidence that anything demonic has happened.
Yeah, you have to kind of beg the question in that perspective. He started with, it was a demonic presence. I knew it.
Yeah.
How do you know it? What's the justified
belief? And if you listen, his explanation for that, which he preambled, which was he was used to some of this happening when he was younger. Curiously, demonic interaction seems to have diminished in his life in here. Don't call in just to tell us a story. It's not going to go well for you. You've either got evidence or you don't. And if your point is that God isn't going to provide evidence, then you should call some other show, because this is about tell us what you believe and why. And if your reason why is an anecdote, we are never going to be impressed. What you need to do is ask God what story, what evidence you should tell on this show. If you think there's a God and God speaks to you, then you should pray to God and say, Lord, and I'm going to do this. Here, hang on.
Oh, he's getting the hat. Got your Jesus hat on?
Lord Jesus, I beseech you as a follower of your work, as a sincere and devout believer, I want to do what you want me to do as a Christian. I want the Holy Spirit to work through me to reach these atheists. Lord, you have put a burden on my heart for Matt Dillahunty and J. Mike. You have put a burden on my heart for these atheists, and I want to do the best I can to reach them. And so I need your help, God, because they're not going to listen to just a personal testimony. They're not going to listen to anecdotes. God, I need some data. I need some evidence. I need you to work through me. Please, God, tell me right now what I should say when I call into the atheist experience. Please, Lord, I'm begging you. I am only here to do your will. And if you do not want me to do this, please tell me, don't call the atheist experience. But if you want me to reach out to Matt and J. Mike and all of the other people on the atheist experience, please, God, tell me exactly what we'll say. Tell me the words that will move their reprobate hearts, that will open their hearts and their minds to the truth of the Holy Spirit and the guiding wisdom of your son, Jesus. In your holy and precious name, I beg you, Lord. Thank you. Thank you. Amen. Now,
that was pretty good.
Until that happens, I guess we're just going to be stuck with the dregs of whatever anecdotes people are going to present. So
could you imagine a criminal like just giving their testimony of like, well, I was innocent because I, you know, in my room, I was doing X, Y, and Z. And then my person in my roommate asked me this. That's evidence. Like, no, yeah. It's just you claiming.
Your Honor, I couldn't have murdered that family of four. I was busy praying away the demons from my room. Anyway, we have Saeed in Morocco. How you doing? You've got a question for us about making atheists angry. So welcome. You're on with J. Mike and Matt.
Hello, Matt. Hello, J. Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Well, thanks.
Matt's here too.
Good. Matt, for the start, I would like really to apologize to your call screening center. I was not truthful, so I would like to apologize before I talk to you, and I hope you could give me the opportunity to talk to you, please.
What were you not truthful about?
I did lie that I was not an atheist, but I am an atheist.
Oh, so you pretended to be a theist and lied to the call screener so that you could talk to us. I tell you what, normally I would hang up and say, call back on another week and be honest. But you've been on hold for over an hour. What could possibly be so important that you wanted to lie?
I am so sorry for that. I've been trying to contact you since the last couple months, but I couldn't. There was no success. And finally, I went through. So what I would like to talk to you about is being angry atheist. I am constantly angry at people who believe in God or people who are religious. So my background is I come from a Muslim family who believe in Islam. And since I was young, I really had a grasp of not being Muslim, not believing. And now everything that I listen from, believers or Muslims or other religions gets me really angry. So, for example, my mom will tell me, oh, you have a headache. Oh, pray to God. God will help you. And I say, mom, no, I take it paracetamol. I feel better. You know, I don't need to pray to God to feel better. So all these small things really add up, and I get angry every single day. So my objective to call you today is how can I be more relaxed, feel more, reasonable, and understand people who still believe in God or people who still have religion.
That's a good question. I used to get really, really frustrated at people very visibly. For me, I think that there are entire reasons to get mad. If you came from a Muslim background, I don't really necessarily know how far you were into it. But with any of these types of religions, I would say there's ample reason to be upset, especially coming out of it. But what could you pinpoint what it is exactly why you get mad? Is it from a societal standpoint of maybe we're just regressing? Or what is it? Do you even know what it is that is bothering you? Saeed?
Okay. He dropped.
Okay.
So I went to all that trouble. So let's just answer him off the air. Because we got three more calls to try to get to in about 10 minutes, or maybe we'll run a little over. First of all, if you're finding yourself, if you are dead set on being mad at anybody who's unreasonable or irrational, you're going to be mad all the time forever. Because all of us are going to be unreasonable and irrational about something at some point. The thing to try to remember is that, and maybe this next call will kind of address that, is that these people aren't doing this to make you mad. They're just sincerely believing things. And so maybe focusing on, helping is a little better, but it's okay to get angry on occasion. Let's take this call here from Billy in California, has a question for us that may relate to this and help the angry. So welcome, Billy. You're on with J. Mike and Matt.
Thanks, guys. You guys have had a very positive influence on my life, and I really wish Saeed had not lied, because I have a very similar question. But, I grew up in a very, very Irish Catholic household, very religious. I got to college, and I also realized, unfortunately, that I was homophobic and a little bit racist. And I worked very hard to overcome these stereotypes and prejudices, and I evaluate my life constantly to make sure I don't have these sort of negative things in my life. I like to think of myself as an open-minded person. But, after 20 years of being an atheist, I became very anti-theist a few years ago. It also happened to coincide with my, AA and recovery and things like that, which I did promise the call screener I would not talk about. But as a result, I have become...
What's up with everybody just flat out lying to call screeners
against
So Billy, we're running short on time. The question that's listed here, you're wanting to know if theists are dumb. Here's a question. Do you think that my IQ was lower when I was a theist or higher?
That's a great point.
Okay.
Exactly the same.
No, actually, it was higher because it tends to go down as you age. but IQ is also just a measure of how good you are taking an IQ test. I don't give a shit about what somebody's IQ is. But colloquially, am I smarter now? It depends on how you're going to define smarter. But was I dumb just because I believed the thing that people around me believe? The fact is, human beings are flawed thinkers. We're all going to believe things for bad reasons. And I believe things for bad reasons. And I still believe some things for bad reasons, I'm sure. It's just that now when they're pointed out, I give them up. But I know it's difficult to deal with. I know it's frustrating, especially because on this show and other shows, occasionally we get some incredibly dumb arguments presented. I got into it on Twitter with a guy who could not possibly construct a valid syllogism, couldn't tell you what a valid syllogism was, presented one that he thought was valid in sound that had three premises and no conclusion, and none of the premises were the major and minor terms were not connected in any way. It was completely invalid. And yet when I pointed this out and told him he should talk to a Christian philosopher, he decided to screenshot that, tweet again, and call me the silly atheist. There are people who are affected by Dunning-Kruger and don't know what the hell they're talking about. But no, they're not all dumb. There's probably just about as many stupid theists as there are stupid atheists.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. There, it has just no relation in that sense.
But we're in a rush, Billy, and I appreciate that you're waiting, but I got to move on.
All right, thanks.
Excellent. I have one more potentially quick call for us to try to address, and that's Guy in Georgia. And then there's a call that may be longer that may run us past. So, Guy, welcome to the show. How can J. Mike and I help you?
Oh, yes, sir. Glad to finally talk with you, Matt. Anyway, I'll try to make this short, even though I would like to say, and I'd like to call in again perhaps and just say that, yes, I'm a Southern Baptist minister's son, and I'm also homosexual, and I'm also becoming an atheist. And so there's lots of drama, and also going to be 60 years old next month. So there you go.
Awesome. I'd love to talk to you again about other stuff, but let's try and knock this out.
Let's try to knock this out. Okay, my last hold to eternal life. Let's knock this out. Okay, let's go yes or no. The universe, I have a strong science background. The universe is about 14.5 billion years old, so let's round that up to 15 billion. Yes or no? Or we, at least we think so.
I think it's 13.7, so I'd round it up to 14, but I don't think a billion here or there really is going to make much difference to the argument.
Yes, exactly. So let's just say that if you're lucky, you're going to live, we can all, I'll say this, we're all going to live to be about 100 years old, barring something unforeseen in the next 100, 200 years.
Sure.
That's our lifespan, only about 100 years. Okay. So if you divide 15 billion by 100 years, that's, I believe, 150 million.
It's a lot.
Ratio of 100. That's a lot. So we've been, our lifespans are infinitesimally short. But let's say that you and I are talking one-on-one. We know that we're both sentient. We've been sentient for as long as we can tell. And for as long as we can tell, it's just our little lifespans. We also know that the universe is probably going to be around for trillions of more years. In other words, the universe is relatively young. So there's infinitesimally long periods of time we're talking about. My argument is, and it could be a straw man, I think it probably is, that's my one little hold on to eternal life, is that since we are sentient now, and the chances are,
you're breaking up.
Your phone is completely breaking up, and I'm missing it. But let me do this. First of all, there are problems with your math, and that is that human beings have existed for about 300,000 years, and prior to that, human beings couldn't exist. And so, even if we hit, let's cut the life expectancy from 100 years to 50 years, so that we average it out, which means at 50 years. Each human being is going to experience roughly 1/6,000th of the entire period of time that humans could exist. Okay, what's the point?
The point is there might be something scientifically we don't know about that can get us to some sort of a Hindu type way of.
Why should we care about there might be something that might be able to get us to something maybe like this?
Just scientifically,
that's not science. No. If you walked into any scientific discipline to give a paper and you said there might be something that might maybe get us to something like this, you would not be doing science.
Oh, I'd be laughed out of there. You're very correct, sir, about that. Yes.
Yeah, you would just be providing conjecture with nothing else to substantiate it, which is not science.
Nothing to substantiate. Right. Okay. Yes, of course, if you go back to the, let's say the 17th century, nobody had a clue as to what electricity was. So okay. There might be something else out there that we have no way of.
Well, no, let's use that example. If we had attributed it to some magical thing, we would have been wrong, right? If we filled that gap of our knowledge with something that we have no basis for.
We
would be wrong. Yeah. And we did do that. And we do that a lot.
It was Zeus that hurled lightning bolts down. That was our explanation for electricity. The time to believe something is after there's evidence for it. And so the time to believe and have an understanding of electricity is after we have demonstrated what it is. And so if, in fact, there's maybe something, then the time to believe it is after you've demonstrated.
I'll wrap this up in one sentence. There is no evidence at all for anything to do with life's transference. But that's pretty much what I'm talking about.
Hey, which I'm not aware of any evidence, and so I would generally agree with you. And now we're back to what happened with the first or second call today. But I got to let you go, Guy, because there's one more call I want to get to before we close this out, but I appreciate it. And call us back when you get something firmer.
Yes,
there we go. All right. And as a special treat for my friend, J. Mike, and thanks for him being here this week, I'm going to play a game of chess while you talk to Otangelo. Welcome, Otangelo. How you doing?
Yes. Hello, Matt. Hello, J. Mike. How are you guys doing? Okay. Here is my argument. Creating a translation dictionary, for example, of English to Chinese requires always a translator that understands both languages. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, but I already know which what you're probably going to do. I don't read minds like Matt doesn't either, but I've heard this already, and it's not going to be analogous from my perspective, but continue.
Yes, it is analogous. That is analogous to what we see in biology, where the ribosome translates the words of the genetic language composed of 64 codon words to the language of proteins composed of 20 amino acids.
Let me stop you there so we can have a dialogue. A ribosome has somewhere around like 82 parts, the central part being an RNA molecule. So given that, the particular core of the ribosome, which is self-replicating ribosome, is that relevant before you continue?
No, I'm not talking about the ribosome. I am talking about that the fact.
I'm gonna interject here. I wasn't going to, but I'm gonna interject because J. Mike's completely correct. This is not analogous, and I can prove that it's analogous with two words: Enigma machine. An entirely mechanical process where the translation does not understand, the translator doesn't understand anything. This, when you have a chemical process, it is following a mechanical process, similar to the Enigma machine, which you enter your information and a mechanical process that does not understand it. And the person entering the information does not necessarily have to understand it. And the person decoding does not necessarily understand it. The translation machine follows a mechanical process that translates one set of instructions into another that can then be decoded by another Enigma machine that also does not understand it. So, Otangelo, thank you for ending the show with a demonstration that you are going to come up with analogies that are not analogous, because this is the problem when you look at biology as if it's a code that requires an intelligence to translate. Yep. You are debunked by two words: Enigma machine.
And the fact that none of the literature or academia, you're going to find that the code is from, if we call it a code, you're not going to find that it's referenced from one intelligent thing to another, which is what you're trying to do.
Yep.
And you miss out on the fact, like we've had a conversations, like a 2-hour conversation with Otangelo, if people can go find it. He doesn't, also part of the argument, we have things like amino acid codons that, assignments that are going to be switching right on occasion throughout life. And that doesn't require a design. I mean, it seems to fit the bill of something that would naturally evolve. But yeah, maybe, I don't know if we let you respond before we close out, or how you want to do that, Matt.
No, he's done.
He's done. Done.
Yeah, no. That's the thing is, I'm happy to actually have them present their arguments. Sometimes you can do an easy debunking of it. It's like, oh, here's the problem in your argument. Like the person who called in who didn't have a particularly good definition of God, or defined God in such a way that the argument becomes circular. And people like that who recognize, wow, I made a mistake. Let me go off and reformulate this. Let me come back with something else. Those people are more than welcome to call back. Otangelo is going to sit here and deny until he's blue in the face that my rebuttal was actually a rebuttal, because he's so dedicated to this notion that, oh, no, this is the way it works. And this, you know, there has to be an intelligence behind this. There has to be. And even when you provide an example of something that's not an intelligence, this is purely mechanical, which is how we would describe the chemistry involved in replicating DNA. It's like, oh, no. And on that note, we have reached the end of J. Mike's first time on AHP. Woo!
Yeah,
I can guarantee you that barring some catastrophe, J. Mike will be back on AXP. But if you enjoy watching him here, please tune in to Talk Heathen, because he's regularly scheduled over there on that program as well.
Yeah, I'll be there next week.
Yeah, and you can watch stuff at AEN Podcast that we put a link up to earlier. A last note, I've been pretty vocal about the situation with regard to the health crisis around the world. I'm trying to use my words very carefully here. And I greatly appreciate first responders, the people who are in the healthcare industry. And I appreciate the fact that there were a lot of people who took this seriously and took those precautions. The world is starting to open back up in different places. Not everybody has access to immunization, but the world's starting to open back up. And because of that, I have been more likely to leave my house, which is something that I don't do often. And I do carry a mask with me. but I've been enjoying myself. I've been trying to, in small doses, love life. I'm genuinely happy. I'm happy to be here doing the Atheist Experience. I'm happy about the amazing crew. I'm happy that J-Mike got to do it with me. I love doing Talk Ethan with him last week. I look forward to doing more shows with him. I love the way life can be. And yet I'm constantly reminded that throughout this, we've lost millions, 600,000 plus Americans. And that while we don't necessarily always talk about political things here, there was a lot of political news. It was a federal judge that basically shut down DACA so that nobody knew will qualify for it, and that's going to have to be fought. Chuck Schumer brought federal legislation proposals to decriminalize marijuana. There are trans rights issues being fought all around the globe. This program, yes, it focuses on gods and religions, and it allows people an opportunity to present their case. And if it's a good case, great. And if it's a bad case, well, we're going to point that out. There's a big world out there. There's flooding going on in Europe that has killed hundreds, and there's a lot to pay attention to. Don't let it grind you down. Don't let the fact that the world often seems awful mire you in depression and sadness, because one thing to take some confidence in is that there are a bunch of people here, a bunch of volunteers who are working to make sure that we can at least address one issue, and we'll do our best to support those organizations and those other activists that are working to address other issues as well. Atheists Helping the Homeless, Humanists at Work, Recovering from Religion, Freedom from Religion Foundation, all of these things all within just this little realm. But in the broader realm, you have Doctors Without Borders, you have many charities, many organizations that are out here trying to make sure that the world is a safer and better place. And that requires all of us to be diligent in our safety and in the safety and health of those people around us. But it also means that if you're mired in this morose sadness about the state of the world, that's going to really inhibit your ability to help improve the status of the world. And I genuinely am optimistic. Yes, I know climate change is a huge thing, and we're kind of ignoring it because of all these other things and because we're terrible about things. I am genuinely optimistic about the future of the world, about the future of the atheist community of Austin, about the future of all of us. But it requires us to not get too bogged down in the negative. I've done what I can to help make sure that I'm not getting as bogged down in the negative, but we cannot lose sight of the issues. Please take care of yourself, take care of each other, and we'll see you back here next week. Bye-bye.